Can you tell me about your upbringing? What was childhood like?
Yeah, for me, childhood was tough. Realistically, my mom has 9 kids. My pops has an unlimited amount, probably like 30 plus. That man could stop. It was tough though. Realistically, we were like dirt poor. Like, my mom and dad were in jail same times at times, you know, and sometimes they were flip flopping. He's in jail, she's in jail, he's in jail, she's in jail. You know, he wasn't really a present father at all. And I, a lot of the times he would lie. He would say like, oh, I'm gonna be there for this, or I'm gonna be there for that. And that wasn't the truth. So it was a lot of times where we didn't have, electricity, no food in the house. We sit in the dark, we homeless, we living in abandoned houses and shelters, things like that. That was very, very normal. Big shout out to my brother, Eric, and my sister, Ozzy, because they held it down for us. They made sure that we was cool. And they always took the extra step to make sure we learned the things that we're supposed to learn, that they learned. But at the end of the day, they can only do so much for the fact that my parents were just rolling stones, both of them together. Solid.
What age would you say that you went through the foster care system?
I went through foster care twice.
Okay.
So I went when I was around 6 years old, and then I went again when I was like 13.
Okay.
So yeah, I didn't go to fifth grade at all. Like, I went to fifth grade for one day. Then they came and got us, and they took us to foster care. So,
I know you said sibling wise, and you said there was 9 of you guys.
Yeah.
Where did you lie in? And like, how old was the oldest sibling?
He is what, like 7 years older than me.
Okay.
I'm third, so it's him, my sister. He might be 6 years older than me. It's him, my sister, and then me.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you ever feel protected as a child?
I feel like from my brother, like, I feel like if anything happened, I could always contact him and he would make sure that we were all good.
So 7 years and you were 6. So who was, like, taking care of your brother and your siblings?
He was just thugging, to be honest, you know. For the most part, like I said, he stayed with my grandma for a little bit. But
okay.
That wasn't like long term. He was just, you know, he was 16, working, figuring it out, making sure he was okay.
Was there ever points in like your life that you remember like living on the streets, not eating? For sure. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, for sure. It's happened plenty of times. Again, it's just so normalized that, like, you know, it's to the point where it's like, when you do it more than you didn't do it, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And for me, it was, there was times where lights was off, so that means everything in the fridge is spoiled. Whatever you had in the fridge, so.
Yeah.
Your parents ain't here, so who gonna go to the store? Or my big brother gonna go to the store? It's points where we lived in the mustard seed, which is right here. I lived in Vegas. We lived in the shelter when I lived in Vegas. We've lived in multiple abandoned homes, people that just weren't there, so we just went in and my mom was like, oh, we just gonna squat in a space, you know? There's been people that came in where we was in somebody's abandoned house and they came and stole all our stuff out, but it's their house, so.
Right.
I mean, they say shit. We was in their house, so. That's really normal, you know? And you know, again, like, just not being able to always know, like, all right, this was gonna happen the next day, you know? Making sure that everybody eats, making sure it's enough for everybody.
Yeah.
Part of it is just me being an older sibling, making sure, like, all right, you wake up, there's this much milk in the fridge. All right, who gonna eat? Little sister, youngest baby sister, baby brother, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You just gotta kind of just figure it out, you know? And then obviously that creates food insecurities, problems in the house, things like that.
Right. At that age, how were you affected emotionally and mentally?
I think, like, just as a man, emotionally, it's just, I was put into this kind of, like, misogynistic view of things, like, where it's, like, you gotta be a man, you can't cry, you can't have, like, emotions, you know, where it's to the point where you don't even learn emotional intelligence until almost where you're forced to learn it. That wasn't something that I was taught growing up about anything about being in tune with your emotions or in touch with your emotions or anything like that. It's always just be a man, suck it up, pull it up by your bootstraps, and just get on to the next thing. So I don't really think it was anything like that. And then, you know, like obviously like discipline from when my parents were there, it was just like get your stuff together type of thing. It didn't really matter if you were feeling the way emotionally because it wasn't, what's the word, valued. There was no value in emotions.
At what age would you say that you kind of like identified your emotions though?
Probably like, I'm not gonna lie, probably 5 years ago, realistically. So like as an adult man, you know?
Really?
Because I don't know, it's just when it's ingrained in you, you know, 18 years and you go to college and you see how other people are, mm-hmm. how other people act, how they're different or, you know, how their relationships with people are different. Then you're like, wait, what have I been learning that was wrong? But even then, it's still 18 years of stuff that was put into you. So you have to get over these things. You have to learn and unlearn things. So, right. You know, I mean, that's put a strain on some of my friendships, relationships, things like that. Just not being able to sometimes connect with people emotionally because you don't have that tie.
And then I know we're going to go back a little bit to when you said boys don't cry as a kid. What does it do to a child's psyche when we use the terms stop acting like a girl when you guys are at that young age trying to, I guess, express your emotions but don't actually know how to use the words to do so?
I personally think it's a two-sided sword, which mm-hmm. is negative on both ends. There's no reason to say it. There's no good that comes from it because from a boy's perspective, you're telling a boy, don't cry, like it's bad. So therefore, you never get to be in touch with your emotional side to be able to understand why you're crying,
right.
What you're crying about, what is this release of, you know, neurotoxins out of your body to be that you need, you know?
Right.
And then on the other end, it also teaches young boys that girls cry and they're emotional and they're this and that, which is detrimental because then you have these young men who just automatically, they're just like, oh, girls are just so emotional, they're this and that. And then that creates a whole nother culture of how these young men view women, which is right. its own issue.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Of course.
So we're going to fast forward a little bit, stepping into adolescence. Do you remember your adolescent years?
I remember everything from when I was 1 year old.
What? Can you tell me about your adolescent years? Like family dynamic shift. I know you said you went through foster care.
Mm-hmm.
Does it ever get any better? Does family support come into the picture? Does mom and dad get out of jail? And
I mean, yeah, they were kind of in and out. So like as I'm getting ready to go to college, probably, my mom, she was more out. She was a little bit more present. But part of the problem is she cares about herself more than everybody else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And she just realized that a few years ago. She's working on it. But because she cares about herself more than everybody else, that means she's going to put her first every time, you know? She got to put her first
right.
every time. So even though she was more present, it's still neat that it happens. You know, she's putting her in front of the kids. So in high school, I lived with my sister and kind of like my brother too. And so that was cool. It was cool, smooth. I went to John F. Kennedy and SCS. It was cool. I got everything I needed to get done. And I was able to also do better in school and stuff like that because the support system was kind of there at that point in time. I was able to get my mind right and focus and lock in because all of the distractions, all the negativity and stuff kind of wasn't there because my sister was in college. My brother, he was established. He had his daughter already, so he was well established. So I was able to, you know, figure my stuff out by that time, probably like 16, 17. So that was actually really good for me. Definitely necessary because the distractions definitely
right.
slow you off your course. So I would say at that time the support system came. My mom wasn't in jail, but it's still the fact that she let anything that she wanted to do, she put that over the children.
Okay, is mom present now?
Yeah, she is.
Dad present?
Well, he wants to be.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And so you're 16, 17 at this time, and you finished in school. Did you get your high school diploma?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course.
Okay.
I was great at school the whole time. I was bad, like, of course, because, like, I mean, who's not bad?
Yeah.
We was fighting and stuff, but I was never skipping class. I was always in class. I was always, like, you feel me? Like, I know the stuff. We messing around and stuff, but I know my stuff, so I'm in the class getting all my good grades.
Okay.
Yeah, I graduated with honors.
Oh, sure. Damn. Okay. Congrats to you. So you're 16, 17. You're moving into adulthood. When you think back to anything, everything that you've gone through, and you're becoming a man, what is your understanding of that? Like, how were you processing that at, like, 18,
19?
Were you ready?
No, not at all. Even like going to college, I don't think I was prepared. Seeing other people and how different people's lives are, that goes into it. I don't think I was ready at all. Like, just to be kind of thrown into manhood, kind of like you're living on your own, you gotta do your own thing, you gotta pay your rent, you gotta, you know, all of these things. I'm not sure if I was fully prepared for that. But I think that all of, the negativity, all the trauma, all the survival is what let me be able to get through it, though.
Right.
So even though I wasn't prepared, but my mind, I'm survival mode every day already. So it's like, regardless, I have to figure this stuff out. So I'm gonna figure it out anyways. But obviously, like, my brother, he gave me some good guidance, some good viewing to see how a man should work, how a man should treat a lady, how a man should act, things like that, which definitely helped me feel like I was doing the right thing.
Okay. And so what did the world expect from you as a black man? Even though you've been through the things that you've been through, were you expected to go to college and work?
No.
No? Were you expected to go get a job?
I don't think so. This is something that I talk about with people all the time. I really think, like, as a black man, specifically in Sacramento, you can do the bare minimum and everybody will be okay with you. I feel like if I would have just been like, well, man, I'm not going to college, that people would have been okay. I don't think I would have been, they would have pressed issues hard. If I would have just been a bum cooling at somebody's house or at a girl house on her couch, it would have been cool. Like, I don't think that it's... Yeah. I don't think that there's a microscope that says you need to go do this.
Right.
Like, it's okay for you to just kind of like be a bum, you know? And I feel like that's a path that if I wanted, I could have took and I would be fine right now because somebody would have took care of me the whole way, you know? I could have found somebody to take care of me the whole way, or my mom would have been fine with it. My pops would have been fine with it. You know, like, it wouldn't have been, an issue for me to not have any of the things that you should be doing as a man, you know, which is a problem.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're in survival mode still?
No, not at all. Okay. I feel cool. I feel very, what's the word? Relaxed. Okay. But it took a while, but I definitely feel calm. I feel like life is life. So precious, and we live every day, and you're just trying to survive every day. It's kind of you're throwing it away, you know. You're throwing the precious moments away. You don't get to live the experiences because you're just always trying to just survive. And I don't feel like I'm in that right now.
At what point did you cross over to take your life back? I guess to say
maybe like right after college.
Okay.
Because I was like, I graduated college and I was like, I had a big boy job, big boy money, big boy car, you know what I'm saying? All the things, you know, I don't have to call home and be like, oh man, this is messed up. I don't really have to call anybody and be, you know. So I really think that that's the point where I was like, oh yeah, I'm cool, you know, just comfortable. Right. You know, I'm relaxed now, but I was definitely comfortable graduating.
What made you go to college? Like, who pushed you? What was your, like, aspirations mm-hmm. to go off to college?
I didn't really have aspirations probably till, like, maybe, like, 10th grade. Because I didn't even know what college was, to be honest with you. It wasn't like a thing. Like, again, nobody's pushing on you. Nobody's telling you. But in, I think, 10th grade, I went to Florin High at that time. And the principal was like, 90% of y'all are going to fail. And I was like, oh, shoot. She was like, only 1% of y'all are going to go to college. 90% of y'all are going to fail and do nothing with your life. That's what he said to everybody in an assembly. You know, and obviously the reason why he did that was to kind of like get under people's skin. But I'm just like, brother, you got to know your, you got to know your personality. You can't just talk. These are kids, you know. Yeah. But to me, it put fire. I was like, I'm not about to be the 90%. I'm on. So that's kind of what put it in my head. And that kind of like locked me in. Like I said, I was still kind of bad. But it kind of like locked me in to the point where I'm like, oh yeah, let me finish school. I'm going to college. And then, you know, at that time, my mom was like, oh, yeah, go be a doctor, go to this, go to that, go to that. And my sister went to college, too, so that helped for sure.
What did you major?
I majored in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior.
Okay.
Double majored in sociology, triple majored in human development.
Okay.
Yeah.
Impressive. Very impressive. So what does work look like for you now with the college degree? What do you do now?
So just, I mean, in general, like, I'm not gonna lie, college degree does not equal a job at this point in time. Just, okay. You know, and for me, I think you should only go to college if it's something that you want to do. If you don't want to go to college, as long as you're doing something to get, you know, get it. I just had to say that, though, because, okay. Like, I know some of my college people graduated, they're working at T-Mobile or Metro, you feel me? And it's just the reality of the situation. They know it's hard to find a job, though. But with that being said, I got 4 jobs. I work at a school.
Okay.
Which is probably the most place that I use my degree. And I kind of advise students through their college path. I help them with financial aid and getting money to go to school. I also work for another company called Play Black Wall Street. For this, we teach high schoolers to probably elementary school students financial literacy.
Okay.
So how to spend money, how to save money, how to start businesses and things like that. And then I also work at Apple. So I designed the iPads. Everything inside the iPad, I designed that. That has nothing to do with my degree, but that's just one of my skill sets.
So besides the principal saying that only 90% of you guys were going to graduate or do anything with your life, when did you, besides that, realize that like, you wanted to change the circumstances of your life? That you didn't want to?
Yeah. I think it's always kind of been in me, just a little bit, because I mean, like I said, it was kind of bad, but I was just still like, I mean, like, I'm not repeating this cycle. I already see what my pops is doing. I see what my little brother's doing. I'm not, it doesn't make sense. I never saw the pros of it. I never saw the wins of it.
Right.
Like, my pops was a drug dealer, but we were always broke. Like, how does that make sense? You feel me? It doesn't make sense. How are you a drug dealer, but we're always poor? Like, right. It doesn't make sense. So why would I go be a drug dealer if I can see a drug dealer who's always broke? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I got cousins who was drug dealers and stuff, too. And I'm like, you know, they had a little bit of money, but it's not like, you feel me? It's not substantial or it's not sustainable.
Right.
You know, so for me, that didn't make sense. And I've always been like, what makes sense? And that doesn't. So I could have 100% chose that path and be like, oh, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. You know what I'm saying? It's in my blood. It's running. You feel me? No, because to me, it didn't make sense. So that's what kind of steered me away, seeing it over and over again, seeing dudes gangbang over and over again and go sit in jail or die or whatever, you feel me? Just the cycle happened over and over again. I seen it multiple times and I was like, but why would I choose that if I could see it over and over again? So that's what kind of steered me the other way to go to college and stuff.
And for like childhood trauma, how have you gotten past that? Do you go to counseling?
Currently, no, but I've been to a good amount of therapy, though. Okay. And I believe in going to see a therapist. And I believe you can always go see a therapist. I can go see one right now. I don't feel like everybody's ever fully healed, because every single day you might gain some new trauma that you might not even understand is trauma. So I do think that going to a therapist or going to counseling or trying to heal yourself is never truly over. There's always something that you can heal from. I'm definitely pro-therapy, though. I be telling all my guys, like, go. They be like, no, I'm not going to fucking therapy. Come on, Bridget, go talk to the lady or the guy, man. They might just tell you something to help you feel a little bit better about yourself and get your stuff together. Yeah.
Okay. What's one thing about yourself you never said out loud, but you wish somebody understood?
I don't know. That's kind of tough. Let me think. That I never said out loud? Maybe that I forgive my parents, realistically, even though, like, they kind of, like, to me, like, they did this real grimy life, you know? And I be saying this all the time, that people treat you a certain way, and you don't even have to do anything for them to treat you that way. You can treat them with full utmost respect, and they can still treat you like trash, you know? And I feel like probably a good amount of our life, we were kind of treated like trash, you know? Like, we were a burden to our parents. And even then, I still feel the forgiveness to forgive them for how they treated us, you know?
That's a blessing. Mm-hmm. It take a lot to forgive.
Definitely do.
It really do.
Can't forget it, though.
Yeah, can't forgive. But you can forgive. Would you consider yourself a victim of your circumstances?
I would say, yeah, I'm a victim of my circumstances, but I don't think we ever succumb to the circumstances. And that's sometimes when it becomes bad. When you blame every single thing on what the situation you were put in versus making a better situation. It's okay to be a victim, you know? We gotta figure, everybody's a victim of something, and you have to figure out how to come out of that victimhood standing strong with your chest high and your head up. You know what I'm saying? And that's why I think, like, for us, and me specifically, I never succumbed to that. I never was like, oh, man, it's just, my life just sucks so bad. Like, it's just so terrible. Like, I was never like that, you know? And sometimes people are like that, and it's okay to be like that. But at some point in time, you got to get out your head and stand up and be like, all right, this sucks, but
yeah,
I'm going to still do it. You can't, you know, people complain about work every day. But what they do, they have something to go to work. If you don't go to work, what do? You succumb to that victimhood. You succumb to it. You know what I'm saying? Now you don't got rent. And it's cultural poverty. It just rolls. So I think that definitely a victim to the circumstances, but never succumb to it.
Okay. That's beautiful. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm like learning as I'm going. would you say you found peace with your experiences that you've gone through? Or is there part of your journey that just feels unresolved?
I feel like I've found peace with it, but the problem is like when it's still around you all the time. When I come to Sacramento, it's still there. You can still feel it. Everybody's still portraying everything that you know that we kind of grew up with.
Yeah.
Everybody around you, your age, under you, over you, everybody still is just giving that. So for me, I'm just like, we gotta change something. Like, we gotta get it together. So I feel like until I can help get this stuff together, I feel like it's gonna be like that. It's always gonna be around me. It's always gonna be absorbed or bumping me, you know.
Okay. So we'll shift gears and kind of see if you can kind of highlight a little bit of teaching in this. When a young boy has no, like, male role model, how does he learn? Like, how does he navigate life? Or is it, I guess, from your experience, if you never had your brother,
mm-hmm.
how would you have navigated it?
And I think that's super tough because not talking about saying without a male role model, there's a female role model, right? And just being honest, I know a lot of guys who was raised by a single mom. And what does that do? Now dudes is acting like girls. Not in the sense of literally acting like women, but then you pick up no male traits or no male skills from a male figure. So now all you do is pick up the things that your mom does, you know? Or the things that your mom gives, or the things that your mother gives you, because she can't teach you how to be a man.
Yeah.
Right? There's things that a guy has to show you how to do because he does them. A woman can't teach you how to stand up and pee because she's never had to do it.
Right.
So there's things that as a male that is just like, first of all, I don't get how you can be a deadbeat. First and foremost, it doesn't make sense to me. That is crazy. You birth this child and you're just like, oh, no, I'm good. That is absolutely insane. Because the child didn't ask to be brought into the world. You did something to bring that child into the world.
Right.
But I do think that without a male figure, it does create problems because then, you know, you don't know how to treat a woman. You don't see your mom treated a certain way. You don't see the women, your sisters treated a certain way by their dad. So then you don't learn how to treat a woman. Right? Mm. So those are the things that I mean. Your mom can't teach you how to treat her. You know, she can only teach you how she wants to be treated. But she can't teach you that, okay, I'm thinking about my mom right now, so let me matriculate those thoughts and buy her flowers. Because that's all that is. When you buy a woman flowers, you're telling her that I was thinking about you. You know, the woman she doesn't care that you bought her flowers. She cares that you were thinking about her. So it's the idea of the flowers that matters, you know? And that's not something that your mom can teach you. She can tell you buy flowers for a woman, and you're going to buy them because she told you to. Right. Versus you buying them because you're literally thinking about this lady and now you're buying her flowers and you're bringing her flowers. So that's something that a man can show you over and over again with your mom or your siblings that are sisters that I think that sometimes you can't get from your mother alone. She can teach you a bunch of other things, as my mom has taught me, but there are certain things, and she can teach you some stuff. That's why, you know, I'm saying, dude, they acting like girls. We all gossiping and hollabalooing and being messy, and you feel me? Like, anytime we have a problem, it's all like, it's overly like, oh, he didn't like me, because I'm like, bro, you gotta let that go. Like, you know, and that's just some stuff that sometimes guys do, which is just different. We obviously, men and women work differently. So, but when you're only told everything from your mom or a lady, then you kind of miss out on some of the things that a guy would teach. Niggas don't even know how to change tires. Like.
So I'll pose the question for, because sometimes the circumstances, sometimes our young boys don't have dads. What advice would you give black mothers raising black sons? Like, what did you need from your mom, I guess, that you didn't get in your childhood?
For me, I think it takes a village, you know. We're all, obviously, some circumstances where these young black men, there's nothing they could have done. Yeah. Their situations, it's tragic situations, or sometimes it's just unfortunate. But I think that when things like that happen, although all the weight shouldn't be on the black moms, but it's like you got to get him around some black men who are doing positive things, or go to events that are black men posted, things like that, to show them black men who are doing positive stuff. Because part of it is, something happens to the dad, or dad is gone, and we just see uncle on the corner, or we just see cousin.
Yeah.
Beating his girlfriend up. There's things that, you know, we see all these negative viewpoints of black men sometimes, and then that becomes, oh, that's just normal. This is how guys do. So I think that probably the biggest thing would be showing the young black men or young black boys positive viewings of black men who are doing other things beside, you know. Because obviously, it's tough being a single mom. So that means that the pressure just keeps getting bigger and bigger. As you get older, more things cost, yeah. things cost, things go up. So as a result, a lot of the times we are in those situations where we're seeing the negative viewings of the black men, because it's just like, this is just the reality of the situation. Right. I'm doing my best for them to be okay, and now I'm in the survival mode, so we're around all of these negative viewpoints of black men, so it's hard to get in those positive rooms.
Okay, thank you. I'm learning as we go.
Of course.
What advice would you give to young black boys who are struggling with self-love due to neglect, drug use, or even death? Or even some of our little black boys that feel like they just don't fit in?
Especially for the older ones, definitely therapy. Like, go therapy. Talk it out. Go talk to somebody. Because I think a lot of times we hold stuff in and it comes out bad a lot of times, you know? It comes out as that anger or that road rage or DV or drugs or something, and that's how we let the pain out. But those are all so many negative ways to let the pain out. You can get some positive reinforcement. You go to a counselor or you go to a rage room or things that you can get these this anger out and learn how to control it versus you just suppressing it all the time. Because when you suppress it, it's gonna pop. It's gonna pop eventually. And then, but I think that sometimes just like women, we're just viewed as just aggressive black people. We're just aggressive and just, you know, even by doing the simplest things when we feel disrespected and we're like, whoa, like that wasn't cool. And then all of a sudden you're just this aggressive person. And then that also blows in because now instead of just you being like, hey man, you didn't say excuse me. You're just like, bruh, and you just push it down. So then it just builds up, you know, just even in the regular world versus just in the black community when you're with other people, all of the little microaggressions that you just push down now give more to that explosion. So I think that definitely therapy and finding something positive, man, go get you a dog, go get you, you know what I'm saying? Don't beat the dog, you know, like, you know, I'm just being real. Like, you know, there's things that should give you fulfillment, experiences that you should be able to receive so that you can be like, dang, I don't need to be this angry person, you know, or I don't need to just go off. So I would definitely say finding an outlet for some of the negative things that are more positive.
Okay. Yeah, that's dope. Thank you. What's one lesson about resilience you want young black boys to remember?
I mean,
for me, guess I understand.
Yeah, for sure. I think for me, it's always going to be another day. The day's always gonna pass. Every single night ends. And sometimes when that night ends, you gotta let some stuff go. Sometimes when that night ends, you gotta take some stuff with you to let go later. Sometimes you gotta take some stuff with you to keep forever. But every time you fall, just get up, you know? You got to, because nobody's gonna pick you up, realistically. Right. Nobody, you know? They're gonna leave you out there and they're gonna leave you to dry. So, you know, take the good stuff with you. Let the bad stuff pass, but always learn a lesson from it. You know, every time you fall, you got to get up. Because nobody's going to do it for you.
Damn. How can men and women work together to break the stigma around, like, emotional expression for black men?
I think similar to what you said earlier, I heard boys don't cry from my mom, too. Like,
I say it to my son. I used to say it to my son.
You know? And like to my daughter, she was crying to me the other day. And I was like, girl, I don't care. Like, get it together. And then I'd be like, oh, I can't say that to her. Because for her, like, even though she was doing something.
Right.
I was like, you're not supposed to be doing that. You know you're not supposed to be doing it. You're only crying because I told you you're not supposed to do that. I don't care. So I had to think about it. I'm like, for her, like, if I tell her I don't care about her crying, it doesn't matter why she's crying. It just matters, like, she's crying and I'm telling her I don't care. So for a boy, if they're crying, you're telling the boys don't cry, and you're invalidating why they're crying, regardless of what it is. So then eventually, there's just no more crying, you know? It's just like, oh, I'm not gonna cry because boys gonna cry. Or I'm not gonna cry because dad doesn't care. You know what I'm saying? Things like that. So we have to, like I said, I heard it from my mom, whole life growing up. You know, even my brother, stop crying, drop another tear. You know, things like that we cannot say. There's so much things that we do to, or that, you know, so much stuff that was done to us as kids that we shouldn't do. Like, I seen a video recently, and it was like this lady was asking her kid all the questions, like, oh, what does a child do? Oh, and then, like, we all, like, oh, stay in a child's place, like, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
But the girl was like, oh, feed me or something like that. And it was just like, oh, wow, she's really living a positive life. Like, she doesn't know none of the, you know what I'm saying? She doesn't know any of the terms. Like, I brought you into this world, and she was like, oh, you're going to love me? Oh, no, it's going to take you out. Because that's stuff that we was taught. But so as men and women, we have to come together to take away a lot of this negative stuff that we were given as kids and as adolescents, and give the youth a lot more positivity, a lot more love, so that they can grow up and then give that to them. And I don't think, you know, I don't think we'll feel the shade. We gotta plant the seeds to the tree, but I don't think we'll get the fruit, and I don't think we'll feel the shade. But eventually, somebody will.
Okay. Where do you think we should start? By just kind of taking out the negative connotations into the things that we say to our kids.
Yeah, you know, like, people be, I personally don't want my daughter, but, you know, like, I understand why whoopings happen, but there is a line between whooping a baby because they did something and beating a kid. Like, you cannot be beating a kid. This is a child. Like, you know? Like, we got hit with whips, sticks, pots, pans, shoes, whatever the mom could find she was throwing. That is insane. Like, you know? So I think, like, part of that is the distinction of, like, all right, the kid is in trouble, they're on timeout, or they get a little smack on the hand, or a little right. spank, things like that, versus literally beating a child. Like, that doesn't make sense. So I think that's a good place to start, too. We gotta get that together. We can't just be beating these kids, and then...
Yeah.
Because that creates a culture of violence. What do we do? Mm-hmm. We're teaching kids that when something happens, you beat. So you beat your kid at home, and then what happens? They go to school, and somebody brushes up against them or hits their backpack. So what they do? What do they know? They know beating. They don't know talking. There's no conversation. There's no exchange of information. Like, oh, you just brushed me, excuse me. You know, automatically violence. So I think that's the one that we need to kind of clear up pretty quick, because obviously it rolls into school. Rolls into life. It rolls into adulthood that the violence is the answer automatically.
Okay. And then going back quickly to fatherhood, how was fatherhood for you?
It was great. I love it. Ecstatic, you know. Every time I think about my daughters, it just makes me smile, you know. I and then, like, just looking at, you know, some of the stuff that my parents did, I'm like, yeah, there's no way, you know, learning from those mistakes. And then, you know, my brother, he's a very good, very great father. So just looking at him and being like, you know, making sure I do the things, and then just not trying to control the uncontrollables.
Right.
There's just so many things that we just want to be like, oh, we want it to be like this and this and this, but there's some things that you just can't control. You know, you can have a baby and she might like her mom more.
Oh my God.
She might like her dad more. Now you're mad, you're angry. No, this is just how this works, you know? All you can do is just give your love to, you know, your child, but I thoroughly enjoy fatherhood.
That's good. And you have two daughters, right?
I have two, yeah.
Do you feel as though, like, systematic issues and economic struggles, police violence, affect emotional burdens that Black men carry?
Of course. I mean, like, still to this day, I don't be doing nothing wrong. When I see the police, I'm just like, You know? I'm driving, legal, nothing going on. I'm not doing nothing wrong. And it's still, when they get behind me, I'm just like, pull me over. I'm just like, what do I do today? You know?
Right.
So that's just systematic pressure that you just feel no matter what. And I think, like, specifically in the Black community, like I said earlier, the culture of poverty, where you are a single mom, you're working every day. You're working every day. Oh, so you get sick. Now you can't go to work. What happens? Mm-hmm. You miss 2 days of paychecks. Now you can't pay rent because you miss 2 days of paychecks. You break your leg, now you can't get to work. You can't catch the bus. You can't, you know what I'm saying? And what does that do? Now, you can't pay rent, you get kicked out, the kids get taken away. It's a culture of poverty. One small thing affects the large scale of how people live, the systematic look of it. Yo, it's okay, she's working, she's okay, she's a single mom, or he's okay, he's a single dad, but one kink in the armor automatically dramatically affects it so much to the point that there is no similar to people who have money. There's no savings. There's no savings. If something happens, it's just messed up. You know, and it's so hard for that bounce back to happen that it's easier to literally fall into poverty than it is to go up, which is backwards. You know, it's easier to just fall into poverty and just be poor, you know, by missing 2 days, 3 days of work because you're sick, because your kid brought a cold home, anything like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, so that, and that's all systematic. It's all set up. Unfortunately, this is the life we live, but yeah.
That is unfortunate. I do see that. And so just to kind of ask, what's next for you? So we can know what's next for KK.
You know, I'm just doing me, you feel me? I'm just... you know, I don't know. Realistically, I'm just kind of just raising my daughters, you know, being a good dad, trying to be a good mentor to the young men. stand in people's face, and then showing people it's a different route. Trying to express to people like everything, it's all achievable, you know? And trying to tell these dudes, get a job. Like, that's part of what I be doing. Like, go work. Go get you a job, bro.
Right.
Get you some money. Take care of your kids. You know, I'm trying to push these positive messages to people, and that's also what I do in my music. Is I'm like, bro, get to
do
it.
Better.
You know what I'm saying? Everybody do better. You can do better. I'm letting you know you can do better. It was a terrible situation. So yeah, that's what's next for me. Just keep trying to push that agenda.
Thank you. And that wraps it up. I just want to say I appreciate you taking the time out to let me do your interview.
Of course.
I know I've been prolonging it and pushing it. It's been months. But I'm happy we finished and we were able to get it through. And I mean, sitting with you, I learned. I mean, I'm not a single parent. My son has a active father,
mm-hmm.
But there was parts where he wasn't present,
mm-hmm.
Due to incarceration,
mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to like pour more into my son and get
right.
to know him, not showing up as his father or his counselor or a friend, just showing up as his mother.
Right.
So I think that's where my heart is when I say I'm writing Afflictions of a Black Man,
mm-hmm.
To be able to show up as his mother.
Right.
And I've said things like stop acting like a girl, and my son has suppressed his emotions, and he's only 10.
Mm-hmm.
There's times where he's drawn suicidal photos. So I think the fear for me, I'm about to cry. The fear for me is just kind of disappointing my son, mm-hmm. and then not being able to like seek help from Black men who've lived through the experiences. Because
mm-hmm.
then I'm doing a disservice to my son
right.
by thinking I know how to raise him and I'm not a man myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I see the dynamic from when I raised my daughter versus how I raised my son.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard.
Yeah.
It's definitely hard. So I appreciate you, like teaching me,
mm-hmm.
Even in this short time, what I need to fix. Cause I see my flaws.
We all got stuff to work on. You feel me? Like, nobody is perfect at all.
I mean, I'm a good mom, but I've seen where I've faulted my son by, like you said, I used to whip my, I don't whip my kids no more, but I used to whip my son with, yeah. So whippings was a thing. The suppression of emotions, stop acting like a girl, because I didn't have their dad around at one point. So I'm like, no, you need to like be a man. But how could I ask that of an 8-year-old or a 6-year-old son? And he's 10 now, and it's different.
Right.
So I'm trying to pour more into him and get to learn.
When you mature the Black babies before they, you feel me, treat them like...
I didn't realize it.
You know?
I really didn't until he drew that photo of, like, I guess it was, like, a Black man hanging himself.
Yeah,
and then, tough. Like, somebody was, like, shooting another guy in the head, which reality clicked in. I'm like, I'm the problem.
Mm.
So, and the book for me is bigger than just... interviewing Black men. I'm like learning in the process, and I hope I can help other mothers, other men, even teen boys who are going through the struggle of trying to like learn life. It's not easy.
Of course.
So I appreciate you more than you know.
No. I'm happy to be here.
Any questions? Before we go.
No, I'm cool.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Of course.
You did great. Any questions?
When's your book coming?
So I'm hoping to have it done by the end of the year. Yeah.
Dope.
Yeah. So we're going to push. But it'll probably be released, I want to say March to May, during Mental Health for Black Men Month.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Fire.
So that's my idea of it. Yep. That wraps it. Thank you, too.